Welcome to episode 183 of The Lab. I'm Brad Barton.
And I'm Phil Barton.
Today, we have links on the show page where they usually are. Yes, and you can find those by visiting thelabwithbrad.com. Rocks!
They're everywhere.
They're everywhere. This is this episode. The next couple of episodes are about geology, mostly because I keep running into it. Phil, when I'm studying the history of life and how fossils form, you end up running into things about geology. But there are also big, fat, gaping holes in my knowledge base.
Ah, when you said running into it, I thought you meant literally.
Well, that happens too. Running into it, falling off of it, you know.
I ran into it with a car once. It was bad.
Walls greatly impede my progress. One of the things that I keep hearing about are minerals. And for decades now, I've had this very fuzzy notion of what a mineral is in my head.
I assume you know now.
I know now. It is a chemical substance in a crystal form, usually very, very tiny crystals.
Ah, so, okay. So the little flecks of quartz in a piece of granite.
But for example, if you take a particular rock and slice it thin enough for light to shine through, and stick it under a microscope, you will see many tiny, differently shaped and differently colored crystals.
Pretty.
And those are different minerals. Even a I really should have planned this sentence before I opened my mouth.
Even a chemical
mineral. Even a given chemical can have two different minerals that are just different shapes of crystal, depending upon the temperature at which it formed, the surrounding pressure, and all sorts of other things. The other thing about these little crystals is that they are often still chemically active.
Okay.
Should they encounter oxygen, for example.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yes, oxygen or some kind of acid or a base or even just water that dissolves them. Part of the definition of mineral is that specifically that it does not come from the actions of life.
Oh, okay.
So that begs the question, what about rock that comes from life? Well, life makes stuff, and a lot of it is gross.
Yeah, waste products, gross.
For example, peat bogs.
Oh, yeah.
Peat bogs. There is a moss called peat moss. It often grows in peat bogs and becomes part of the peat. But peat is any compressed vegetable matter that has existed in stagnant, low-oxygen waters, which retards the rotting process. And it gets squished and squishy.
Mm-hmm.
And it is several feet deep. If it gets covered by a layer of other sediments and squished for long enough, it turns into coal.
Ha-ha!
Yes. Now, the first thing that happens is you get stuff called lignum, which is the lowest grade of coal. It has the least amount of carbon per weight and the most moisture content. And this is brownish, really crumbly stuff. But as the compression continues, water and other stuff, including CO2, gets forced out of the material and it changes into other forms of coal. And that process can get you all the way up to what they call bituminous coal.
Which one do we burn?
That one.
Oh, okay.
And, well, all of them.
If we can set it on fire.
But the preferred coal, the highest grade of coal, is stuff called anthracite. And you don't get that except along areas where mountains have been built, because it takes a lot of pressure to turn peat and bituminous coal into anthracite. Mm. It has the highest carbon content, the least moisture content, and unlike every other form of coal, if you pick it up, you're not left with a smudged, blackened hand. It is a rock.
Can you burn it?
Yes, you can.
It's a rock that you can burn. Rocks are neat. Okay.
Now, a little factoid I bumped into, I'm not sure about this. I didn't have time to dig into it much, but I guess to get anthracite, you need a lot of pressure, but relatively low temperatures. If you happen to have higher temperatures and that pressure, you end up with graphite.
Oh, what? Pencil
lead. Yeah. I guess they called it pencil lead because it superficially resembles lead ore.
Okay.
So, you know, modern pencil lead is a mixture of powdered graphite and clay. Because I knew you were going to ask about pencils, or at least bring them up.
Of course I was.
So I had
at all in my plans.
So
okay.
I had to have a point.
Okay.
Just like a pencil. I am sorry, but yeah. You know. Life giveth, and life taketh away. As life is making rocks, it is also eating them. Or at least breaking them down. Now we get to erosion, which is any process that takes material from one place and moves it to another. Usually in the process, it gets broken down into sediment.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes carried along as a chemical in the water, dissolved in the waters. Lots of things do that. Wind, rain, mudslides, rock slides, and also life.
Mm-hmm.
On the land, we're talking about biofilms, bacteria, fungus, algae, and lichen, which is sort of algae and fungus joining forces in a symbiotic critter.
Which is also neat by itself, but that's not what we're talking about.
That's not what we're talking about. There's also mechanical sort of erosion that goes on from roots and just any plant that grows inside cracks within rocks.
Mm-hmm.
And once that happens, if the climate is right, then water can get in there and freeze.
And ice wedging.
Yes,
that is a beautiful thing. Most of the rocks laying on the side of the highway next in the Yakima Valley, the reason they're there is because of the ice wedging process.
Mm.
Just give it enough time, and yeah, eventually these rocks will work themselves loose.
A little ice wedging can make the crack, and then a plant gets in there and widens the crack, and then the crack, and then you end up with stuff on the side of the road in Yakima. Mm-hmm.
There was a truck with a snowplow on it, and I couldn't figure out why he kept driving by in the middle of the summer. And come to find out, his job is to go down this the pretty highway between Ellensburg and Yakima and knock the rocks off the side of off the road, so that you don't lose
time. He's the rock knocker. It's nice work if you can get it.
I guess.
In the marine environment, there are a lot more forms of bioerosion, even on the shoreline. I guess you actually saw one in person.
Oh, it's my turn.
Yes, okay. This is the big fat cue that we didn't plan out at all.
Oh, I was supposed to be cool about this. Yes. Anyways, I went to see the ocean because I hadn't seen the ocean in a while. And I'm in Washington State. I should go see the ocean once in a blue moon. And I saw a bunch of clams in the dirt. I thought they were in the dirt. They weren't in the dirt. They were in rock. Like, they were inside the rock. And I was mystified by the whole thing. I'm like, did the rock form up and around the clams? And if so, these are some really patient clams.
These are patient clams. What kind of rock was it with?
It's kind of a sandstone. Like, part of my theories included maybe a lightning strike formed rock, but then that would include glass, and there wasn't any glass.
Glass, by the way, is when the substance cools too quickly for crystals to form.
Well, we wandered away from there. And we had our theories, and we were not even thinking of what the actual answer was, which is that these clams, I don't know if the clam is called pillock or if the holes they make are called pillocks, but one way or another, this clam bores itself into the rock on purpose. It's got one rough edge, and it just makes itself a home over time. They are patient clams, but they're more proactive than that.
They're more proactive. That is called pitting, which is a good name, and a lot of creatures do at least a little of that. Barnacles, mussels, a lot of sessile creatures that pick one place to live for their entire lifetime, will leave pits behind in stone or even in shells of other creatures. So that's a clam. You know what a shell is made of?
No.
Calcium carbonate.
Okay, I was right about the calcium.
Which is one of the big chemicals that life uses to make rock. A lot of critters use it for their shells. And, of course, there are corals and coral reefs.
Mm-hmm. Yay, calcium carbonate!
Anyway, all those forms of erosion that affect regular rocks also affect rocks made by critters. Coral reefs in particular get eroded by algae, by sea urchins, by shipworms, by various parasites. And you're very excited about this, I can tell. The parrotfish.
I love this fish.
The parrotfish is named after its beak-like mouth. It's not actually a beak. It's a mosaic of teeth on the outside of the jaw that are crammed closely together to make a beak shape.
It's a hardy. I mean, it's chewing on coral. It's gotta
be. It also has very strong jaws. Given the choice, the parrotfish will feed on nice, soft algae. Given the choice.
Why? Yeah.
And these are very big fish, right? Most of them get about the length of your forearm. Anyway, the fish has some frangle jaws, has some of those jaws inside its throat-ish that are specifically designed to mill up rock. It's not just coral. They will also eat sand and, well, anything that the algae is growing on and in. They will use the sides of their beaks to try and scrape the algae off, or they will take a mouthful of sand and pass it through themselves.
Right through themselves.
Right through themselves. And along with things like sea urchins and other critters that do eat coral, either going for the animal or the algae inside of the animal.
Mm-hmm.
What you end up with is very finely ground calcium carbonate. That white coral sandy beach that is so pristine and beautiful has passed through the elementary canal of several different critters.
The documentary I saw with parrotfish, you saw a little school of them passing by and just sand shooting out their backsides.
Yeah. Again, nice work if you can get it. That calcium carbonate can drift down to the bottom of the reef, along with other broken bits of coral, and form what they call calcareous ooze.
Ooze.
I told you I got to use that word and mean it this time.
This is a scientific term this time.
Yeah, ooze.
So descriptive.
If that stuff gets covered in sediment, much like coal, peat, moss or peat bogs turning into coal over time, that turns into limestone over time.
Oh, ooh, okay.
And a particular flavor of limestone is called chalk.
We have graphite, and we turn that into pencils, and then we have chalk, and of course, you know, we turn it into chalk.
Turn that into chalk.
Yeah.
This is one of the first rocks we looked at under the microscope. And when they did, they found it was composed largely, mostly, of little tiny plates of calcium carbonate. It's made by single-celled critters that have their little cell body, and they cover their cell body in little plates of calcium carbonate.
Critters making a rock.
Yes. That stuff collects over time, gets compacted, and turns into chalk. Both chalk and limestone, if they get to the same point that turns regular coal into anthracite, turn into marble.
There it is.
There it is.
Pretty, pretty marble.
Pretty. Very pretty rock. Much harder than limestone or chalk. It often has those different colored veins running through it, or a sort of a ripple pattern in the stone. Meanwhile, coral is not the only critter that will build a reef. Another one that does it is a glass sponge.
Oh, okay. Cool.
All right. There are a lot of sponges that have a hard skeleton. Not all sponges are spongy.
Yeah, the name's misleading. But they can get really big that way.
Most of them do have a skeleton, even the squishy ones. The squishy ones make it out of, a squishy molecule.
Okay.
And then you have a whole lot of others that use either calcium carbonate or silicates. Or silica to make their internal skeletons. This is a silicon dioxide, same stuff that makes up a lot of sand and glass. Silicon, blah, blah, blah. Reefs, right. The sponge reefs often grow in places that are too deep or too cold for the coral reefs.
I see. So whatever they can get their hands on.
Yes. But even in a coral reef, you've still got some critters that like to use silica instead of calcium to make their stuff. There's an algae called diatoms.
An algae?
It's an algae. This is not a colonial critter. These are single-celled algae. Mm-hmm. And they build a little glass shell around their cell bodies.
Oh, wait. Okay, yes. Anyways, I've bumped into them before.
Yes. If you've ever heard of diatomaceous earth.
Yes.
Composed largely of their leftover shells. When that stuff collects on the ocean floor, including mostly it's those diatoms, and you also get bits of sponge skeleton, which they call spicules, that turns into silicaceous ooze.
Well, still ooze.
Okay. Still ooze. I got to use ooze twice and mean it. This is a good day.
Goals in my life. Okay.
When that gets covered by sediment and turns into rock, we call it chert.
We do?
We do.
Chert.
If the chert is of a high enough quality, or if it occurs within chalk deposits, we call it flint.
Flint. We like flint.
Flint, yes. Which was a very handy rock for our species for a very long time. Using stone tools before we were actually human. There's life making rock directly. Sometimes life makes rock indirectly. A few billion years ago, cyanobacteria learned how to make oxygen. That whole photosynthesis thing.
Oh.
And they weren't even trying to make oxygen as far as they were trying to do anything. They were trying to make sugar. But as a byproduct, along comes oxygen. In the ocean were tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of dissolved iron.
Okay.
Now the oxygen reacts with the iron dissolved in the water to make iron oxide, commonly called rust.
Yeah.
And then that precipitates out of the water. And formed bands of alternating iron ore and shale called banded iron formations.
Oh, I bet you that's pretty.
Oh, it is pretty. In fact, miners or people who are interested in mineral resources drool over this stuff. This is high-grade iron ore.
Mm. Well, they're drooling over it for money. I just want to see it.
So ask me what ore is. Here's something else I didn't know for the longest time.
As I understand ore, it's like a mutt. It's you know, you got the stuff you want and it's mixed with other junk. That's
relatively good. Ore is a collection of minerals that has enough of what you're interested in to be worth mining. It's typically they're going after metal, but there are all sorts of ways that various materials get concentrated. Take gold, for example.
Oh, okay. If you want me to.
Make sure it's yours.
Oh, that's important.
It comes up from magma. Most of our gold lives somewhere down deep inside of our planet where things are sort of liquid.
Okay.
And sort of liquid. It's mixed into the magma at fairly low concentrations. But say it interacts with water.
Okay.
Now, this is not really the water you and I are used to. This is under extremely high pressures and extremely high temperatures. It's still liquid.
Mm-hmm.
And under those conditions, it can carry gold. But as the water comes up and cools off and the pressure lowers, it can't hold the gold anymore.
That makes sense.
So it precipitates out of the water and tends to do it at about the same place, and you get a deposit of gold.
There's gold in them. Okay. All right. I see how this happens now.
Sometimes the gold also will combine with other elements, such as sulfur is a popular one. And again, conditions change. The water becomes more alkaline or more acidic. The temperature or pressure changes. The gold precipitates out, and you get deposits. A lot of this happens associated with volcanism and mountain building, and then that rock starts to erode.
Yeah.
At which point, gold, both in its pure form and as various chemicals, flows down into streams and rivers and lakes and beaches.
And ends up in Yosemite's flipping pan. He's sitting down.
Exactly. So there he is. He's panning for gold, and he finds a nugget. Here's the interesting bit. Nuggets are apparently formed by bacteria.
Really?
Yes. This is real news, by the way. They didn't find this out till about 2013.
Nuggets are bacteria poop?
Well, in particular, I'm not even going to try to say the name of this particular bacterium, but it has a couple of plasmids, internal organs, that it's evolved to deal with heavy metal poisoning.
So it's an accident.
Yeah, it would do the same thing with lead or silver or uranium. It's just basically saying, you know, I need you to stop being this awful poisonous acid that you are at the moment and just be gold. Again, I'm fuzzy on the details. I do have a link to a few articles on this one because I was real excited.
Thank goodness for links.
Well, there you have it. I mean, life destroys and creates rock from mucks and mires to gold.
Neat.
And that's about enough for this time. Next time we're going to talk about the geological history of my home state, Washington State, where just about everything happened. See you next time.
Bye.